More of Life Effect Now, I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. You're probably familiar with the concept of citizen science, the opportunities for amateurs to play a role, sometimes a key role, in helping researchers gather or process scientific data. That could involve a backyard bird count or the use of a home computer to sift through terabytes of data.
Our astronomy contributor says there are various levels of citizen science that connect with her field. At a time when many federal scientists are worried about the future of their data, Jean Creighton tells Bonnie North how regular people should view images from sources such as the Hubble Space Telescope.
Let me say from a scientist's point of view that the data that you usually have access to right away is the data that you have requested and has been collected for you. But after a year, that data becomes, it varies from telescope to telescope, but basically within a year, that data becomes public, so anybody can access it. It's true that a lot of the data that scientists ask for are not going to be particularly meaningful to the general public, but it's available. So the approach, I think, for starters, is to get the astronomy picture of the day. I think everybody should get that because those pictures are beautiful and interesting and intriguing, and every day there's a different one. But let's say that you wanted something specific. There are two things that the Hubble team has put on the web that's available to everyone. I would argue that the Hubble site archive is probably most useful to the general public because it's organized both in what's new or relatively new, and that's at the top of their page. But there's also a gallery that you can browse. That's where all the pictures are, and you don't need to know what you're asking for. And I'll pause here for a second just to mention that there is a Hubble Legacy Archive, which is definitely intended for the scientist who knows exactly what camera was used, what object, what filter, and that's a very specific kind of thing. And if you know, for example, that you want to look at a picture of M101, you'll get all kinds of cool pictures. But if you don't know what you're looking for...
I was going to say, if you don't know what M101 is...
Yeah, if you don't know that's the name of a galaxy, a nearby spiral galaxy, then the archive, the Hubble site archive, is going to give you that option. So when you go to browse, it has pictures of stars and star clusters. It has planetary pictures. It has nebulae, which, of course, are gorgeous.
Those are the ones
colorful.
That just grab me, yeah.
Right. And they also have galaxies and cosmology. They have a special folder that has newer, current pictures, so because some of these might be 15 years old. And what's fun about this is that you can look at pictures, astronomical pictures, that look like artwork. It's like walking into a gallery, as far as I'm concerned. And it's true that some of those pictures are going to be artist renderings, but in most cases, they're real images. They might be composite images. They might be multiple filters on top of each other so that you can see many aspects of the same astronomical object. So I think you can get completely lost in one of these. Even an individual folder, let's say you want to look at, you know, globular clusters. So those are, I like to think of them as senior citizens, groups of senior citizens of stars. They tend to be old, 9, 10, 11 billion years old. And they can make very bright, happy collections of bright dots. And some of them can be quite dense. So they are... a beautiful collection to look at. This is the time of year, though, that we're probably starving for color. You can't go wrong with nebulae. They're just beautiful.
Yeah.
And the color scheme here, as I understand it, has been determined by an artistic director for Hubble. So it's one person's vision that those pictures are for the public. I mean, obviously, a scientist isn't interested in if this is going to be a nice purple or is it going to mesh with the green that I have here. They're more interested in getting out as much information, squeezing as much information, physical information they can about the object. But if what you're trying to do is look at this as a non-expert, as just a person who appreciates the beauty of the cosmos, then they were looking for ways to make the palette, the color palette, as compelling as possible.
So when you talk about color palette, are you talking about how the pictures are rendered? Once the pictures are received, the data is received, and whether it's a composite or a single photo, are those colorized? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Most of those pictures are going to be composites of some sort, at least two different pictures. So when I request, let's say, a picture, it's usually a particular filter. So it's a particular band. And the color scheme that I propose for this is completely arbitrary. And in fact, for the scientist, there is no color scheme because that's not what you're interested in. But if you're trying to put together three pictures, you can imagine there's all kinds of tweaks you can do. This could be a blue, this could be a pink, this could be a yellow. If I put all those three together, do I get something that looks muddy or something that looks pleasing? And you can change the colors since the colors that I assign are arbitrary. These are not colors that you would see with the naked eye in most cases. You can decide, this is the color I'm going to assign for the calcium line. This is the color I'm going to assign for, say, oxygen.
Okay, so you've just burst one of my bubbles because I look at those photos, say, of the Horsehead Nebulae, mm-hmm. and I think, oh, my God, the colors are so gorgeous, and that's it. But if I were actually somewhere where I could physically see that, that's not what I would see.
You would not see that,
wow.
Almost certainly. But I don't want to completely burst your bubble because those are not arbitrary. I mean, the colors are somewhat arbitrary, but the brightness levels is not. So you might be able to see, certainly if you had the right kind of eyes, you would be able to see that form.
Right, and all the difference because it looks, there's parts of it that look...
They're brighter.
Brighter
and fainter.
So, and some of it looks like it's wispy and some mm-hmm. of it looks... So mm-hmm. you would be able to see
some of that texture.
The mm-hmm. texture you'd mm-hmm. be able to mm-hmm. see. Mm-hmm. But we're assigning colors for ourselves.
Yes.
Okay.
All yes.
right. Because we see in color, most of us, and I think it helps us.
Well, you also, I mean, the reason why we take pictures in different filters is because we get different information. So this, for example, filter might be highlighting the hottest gas. This filter might be highlighting the densest gas. And you want to see, that tells you something about the physical properties of what you're trying to take a picture of. And that means that if you're trying to tell a story of how this is working or how this has changed, you need that information.
Okay.
So that's why you need the multiple filters.
Well, they're still beautiful to look at.
They certainly are.
Even if that's not what you'd see, if somehow you could stand in front of the Horsehead Nebulae, say.
That's right.
You know.
I tell this story fairly often because it made such an impression on me as a graduate student. One of my professors had in his office, on his desk, I think even, a galaxy atlas. So before we had these things all online, you could own a galactic atlas. And sometimes you'd go into his office and he'd be flipping these huge pages, these gorgeous pictures of galaxies, black and white they were at the time. And I asked him, you know, this was a busy person and why are you flipping through pictures of galaxies? And it was a way, he said, to deal with a bad day at the office. He would basically connect to the bigger cosmos and he would enjoy these galaxies and kind of center himself, which I think is actually an excellent idea.
Yeah, there's something about looking at those photographs, whether you know they're in black and white or whether they're colored, that you just sort of get a sense, certainly, of the vastness of the universe and just how wonderful and
yeah.
amazing
how
it is.
How beautiful it is.
Yeah. yeah. And that somehow we're part of that.
Yes. Yes.
Which is always, to me, kind of one of those things when I actually think on that, I go, oh,
yeah.
wow.
It's exciting.
It is.
And it makes you, I mean, sometimes people say it makes them feel smaller, but I think in some ways it should make us feel bigger because we are part of this, right?
Yeah. What is that? We have the same atoms. We're made of the same stardust.
Yep. We're star stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, of course we're part of it. And so that is just very cool. So in addition to the astronomy picture of the day, what other resources would you recommend folks look at if they're interested in finding out a little something or just browsing?
I think they should look into the citizen science. Now there's several projects that need people looking at the data, because they have so much data thanks to surveys. So I know that there's the Galaxy Zoo project. There's just so many. And they're hoping that people can look at data and help them classify. If you are looking at hundreds of thousands of galaxies, there is no person who can do that fast enough. And computers aren't as good yet. So people are better at classifying things. So if you get beyond, I like to look at pretty pictures, and there's nothing wrong with that, there are ways to get even more involved.
Okay, I love the idea of citizen science. Do you need a scientific background to do this, or
No.
are they just looking for a good set of eyes?
They are looking for a good set of eyes, and of course they do provide you with tutorials so you can train yourself. And I guess they're looking for consistency, so they want to make sure that let's say you and I are looking at the same stuff and you classify it this way, I classify it this way. Then they can put a weight. You tend to go more spiral, I tend to go more elliptical, and then they can make sure that we're all in the end on the same kind of page.
So how would people do, is it just citizenscience.org or are you just?
Well, there are different projects. So the Hubble site does have a link to various projects because there are several. Some of them can be as simple as you're just letting your computer use some of its cycles. So Einstein at Home would be one of those, for example. But there are other projects where you can literally get involved in the science of it. So the Galaxy Zoo I happen to have at the my fingertips, but there are others too.
Okay, so just do a quick search on citizen science and see what comes up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to continue to look at pretty pictures, but maybe in my spare time I can help classify galaxies. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Bonnie North Galaxy Classifier. Do I get a cape?
You could. You can make one, right?
I can make a cape. Well, anyway, Jean, thank you so much for kicking us off in 2017 with a great discussion, and I look forward to next month.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's always a pleasure.
Jean Creighton directs the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee, and she's our regular astronomy contributor. She spoke with Bonnie North.